Well, hey, welcome to another show, the Health First Show, another edition. We got a great show lined up for you today. We're going to be talking with Dr. Gifford Jones. He is, you probably read him in your paper. He has a medical column that's published in 70 Canadian newspapers and some in the States as well. And in the second half of the show, we're going to be talking with Kristen Manasanali about her book, The Ketogenic Diet. But before we do that, here's Reg with the health news.
For people age 70 or older who struggle with a chronic illness, loneliness is often a complicating factor, a new study finds. Canadian researchers looked at 121 older adults, mostly in their 70s. They found feelings of loneliness rose after the onset of chronic health problems, even among those who had been with the same partner for 50 years or more. The new study was published recently in the journal Health Psychology. The researchers say older adults with chronic illness can reduce their risk of loneliness by trying to remain positive about their health challenge and not blaming themselves for the illness. According to a new study, children appear more likely to develop asthma if their living rooms, kitchens, or bedrooms have mold or moisture damage. Children were most susceptible to developing asthma with mold exposure during their first 2 years of life or if they already had allergies. However, mold did not increase children's risk of developing allergies in the first place. Although the researchers found a strong association between mold exposure and children's asthma, particularly for children who already have allergies, the study wasn't designed to prove that mold causes the asthma. The findings were published online February 16th in the journal Pediatrics. Even a few bouts of moderate exercise each week can cut a middle-aged woman's odds for heart disease, blood clots, and stroke, a new study finds. The British study also found exercising more frequently didn't lead to greater reductions in heart risk. In fact, a news release from the American Heart Association indicates adding plenty of extra strenuous exercise may offer little additional benefit above that from moderately frequent activity. The findings were published June 16th in the journal Circulation. In the study, the research team tracked the health of more than 1.1 million British women who had no history of heart disease, stroke, blood clots, diabetes, or cancer. The women averaged 56 years of age when they joined the study between 1996 and 2001. And finally, new research shows American teens don't get enough sleep, and the problem has gotten worse since the 1990s. Just 63% of 15-year-olds reported getting 7 or more hours of sleep a night in 2012. According to the study, that number is down from 72% in 1991. Regardless of the time period studied, the number of teens reporting 7 or more hours of sleep nosedives between the ages of 13 and 18, the study shows. At 13, roughly two-thirds of teens get at least 7 hours of sleep a night. By 18, that percentage drops to about one-third. Sleep experts have noted too little sleep boosts the risk of weight gain, poor school performance, depression, and other problems. The study was published online February 16th in Pediatrics.
Yeah, thanks for that, Rich. Well, our first guest, Dr. Gifford Jones, is a surgeon. He has a long history of working in the medical establishment as a medical doctor. He's got a medical column that is published in 70 newspapers across Canada. He's written a couple books. Dr. Gifford Jones, welcome to the show.
And glad to be on your show today. Many thanks.
Tell me a little bit about, you've been retired a few years from doing surgeries. What keeps you going and working in this aspect of alternative health and medicine?
Well, I guess a good answer is that I keep telling people I want to retire 10 years after I'm dead. I think retiring and is maybe, to me, the closest thing I could get to hell. I saw my last patient when I was 87 years of age. I'm about to be 91 in a few days. And I find getting up in the morning and having something to do, which namely writing 700 words for all these newspapers once a week, is a real challenge, and certainly I think helps you. I think really helps you live longer.
Dr. Jones, what would you say are the biggest problems that are facing Canadians today?
Well, there are several. I think maybe the three biggies are obesity, type 2 diabetes, and heart attack. And the unfortunate thing is we talk a lot about obesity, and we talk a lot about type 2 diabetes, which are, you know, just major epidemics. One in 13 North Americans are suffering from diabetes, and over the age of 65, one in four has diabetes. You know, those are terrible, terrible figures. When I left the Harvard Medical School 65 years ago, it was rare to have what you call lifestyle diabetes. Most of the people had just bad luck by getting diabetes due to bad genes. Now, in those just 65 years, most people, 95%, have type 2 diabetes, which really is just due to bad lifestyle. Now, the real bad news is that we really can't, we're making practically no headway in decreasing the numbers of people with obesity and type 2 diabetes. But the good news is there is now a way to combat this third epidemic, maybe heart attack. And I've been writing a lot about that in the last few years, and also speaking a lot of and going across Canada in the last year and a half, that high doses of vitamin C and lysine in a compound called MediC Plus can not only prevent, but it can reverse hardening the arteries. It's a monumental, revolutionary discovery. I think it's the most important discovery since I left medical school all those years ago. And I think that's the one thing that keeps me going, because the medical profession has not realized that this product is available, and I think people are dying needlessly from coronary attacks because of it.
How does it work so well?
Well, it works well because, well, it goes back to Dr. Linus Pauling, who I interviewed about 25 years ago. And he told me at that time that something I hadn't been told by my esteemed professors at the Harvard Medical School, that animals have always made vitamin C. And humans, in the process of evolution, eons and eons ago, lost that ability through genetic dysfunction. And it was his feeling at that time that it was a lack of vitamin C that was causing the epidemic of cardiovascular disease. The point is, vitamin C is needed for the manufacture of collagen, and collagen is the glue that holds cells together. And if you have insufficient amounts of vitamin C, it means you have rather poor collagen, and cracks occur in the coronary arteries, very, very microscopic cracks, and this is where a blood clot occurs. And the reason for the lysine in this compound is that if you put, trying to make good cement, you put steel rods in the cement to make concrete. And lysine added to vitamin C increases the strength of the arterial wall, so you're less likely to get a brain attack as well as a heart attack. So all these years, this was very, very important to me, because about, well, when I was 74 years of age, I had a coronary, nearly died. And after the attack and a triple bypass operation, my cardiologist and every cardiologist I knew in Canada said to me, you know, you are just a damn fool if you don't take cholesterol-lowering drugs. And if I hadn't met Linus Pauling and being a medical journalist, I'm sure can tell you that there's absolutely no doubt in my mind that today I would be on a cholesterol-lowering drug, with all their unintended consequences, you know, liver problems, kidney problems, muscle problems, emotional problems, increased chance of type 2 diabetes, increased chance of a cataract of the eye. So that I think for the last 17 years, I proved all my doctors wrong by taking large amounts of vitamin C and large amounts of lysine.
So what you're telling me is that you have not gone on any cholesterol-lowering drugs, yet you're 91, you said?
I'll be 91 in a few days, yeah.
And this is almost 20 years ago that your doctor told you to go on these medications. What do you think, what happens to most people when they hear that from their doctor?
Well, most people, when they're told that they must go on a cholesterol-lowering drug, it's pretty hard. To say to your doctor, I'm not going to do it. And believe me, as a physician, when I said to my cardiologist, I'm not going to do it, he was not amused. And I think if I had been in his position, I would have said, look, I think you're really being a damn fool. All the evidence that we have says you should be on cholesterol-lowering drugs, but I'll still be your doctor. And I'll say, have to say to you one of these days, I told you so, you should have been on them. Well, that hasn't proved to be correct. And I literally bet my life over 17 years ago that high doses of vitamin C and lysine in this compound Medi-C Plus, it made more sense to me than the pharmaceutical companies who are primarily driven by money. And, you know, there's big dollars to involved here. Last year, the company that made the main cholesterol-lowering drug made $22 billion. And I think that is research is driven mostly by money and not by good scientific fact. I mean, if your readers will go to my website, www.docgift.com, they can see the before and after pictures of what happens when you take vitamin C and lysine. And you don't have to be a doctor to see what it looks like. You know, a young child looking at it could very easily see the difference. Greater vascularity, more arteries and veins, wider arteries and veins. In other words, more blood going to all the parts of the body, particularly the heart. So, you know, I'd say I bet my life on it, and I'm still here at nearly 91.
Wow. You know, what happens when people take these cholesterol-lowering drugs? I hear, you know, mixed results. Sometimes people say their cholesterol goes down, but then I hear other people saying, you know what, they're having brain fog or there's these other side effects. What are the biggest side effects?
Well, first of all, liver and kidney problems, emotional problems. A lot of people have emotional problems on these drugs because not all medication goes through what is called the blood-brain barrier. And cholesterol drugs do. They go right through the blood-brain barrier, get into the brain, and the brain contains 25% of the cholesterol in our entire body. So the cholesterol is being, the cholesterol metabolism and physiology is being, you know, changed in the brain. And secondly, cholesterol-lowering drugs, this is a point that a lot of people don't realize. Cholesterol-lowering drugs not only decrease the amount of cholesterol that is being produced by the liver, but the cholesterol-lowering drug acts on the same enzymatic system and produces a decrease in a compound called coenzyme Q10. And if you own a car, your car runs on gas. That gives the energy to the car. And as far as our heart is concerned, the energy of the heart is coenzyme Q10. And when these drugs are decreasing the amount of coenzyme Q10 up to sometimes 40%, many researchers believe that the day-to-day reduction in coenzyme Q10, not only day-to-day, week-to-week, but month-to-month, and now year-to-year, will have a bad effect on the functioning of the heart. In effect, taking away the gas that runs the heart day after day may result in more people having congestive heart failure later on in life. And I'm one of the ones that worries about that.
Dr. Gifford Jones, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, I want to find out more about how people can improve their heart and their circulation.